Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, I think your phone's ringing.
Oh, yeah, I better check the caller ID first.
Who is it?
Oh, look, it's 2003. So as we're recording this, this just came over the wire.
Mm-hmm.
Orioles win.
3-2. Home opener.
Home opener,
yeah.
As we record this. So that's good news for the official Major League Baseball team of Rockin' the Suburbs, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And also, Bob Popick, Jim, is not on Twitter.
That probably doesn't mean much to most people, but it means something to us, right? Yeah, so Bob, who does the music, he's the DJ at Camden Yards.
And the Baltimore Ravens.
I don't know. Maybe he's a private man. I don't think that's true, though.
Yeah.
Knowing him. I don't know. All right. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
All this week, we are talking about bands whose big hit song doesn't really represent their body of work very well.
Well said.
So we'll get to that in a second. But before we do that, we got a new package.
Oh, so excited.
We have to open the package.
Yeah. Free stuff. I like free stuff.
Right. So remember, this is the year of free stuff on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Right.
So if people want to send us free stuff, all they need to do is email us rock@suburbspod.com. Say, I got free stuff to send.
Yep.
We'll give you the address where to send it to. Just like this person did.
Yeah.
This is from Jimmy Linetti.
Ooh, this is going to be good.
D&J Glove Repair in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
He's a faithful listener, and I have not.
I've
not opened this before.
I'm seeing this for the first time. Okay. And there's a note inside.
A note here. I'll read the note while you
Oh, fantastic.
See what's in the box. Okay. So the note says, Jim and Patrick, enjoy all the stuff. Just threw a bunch of odds and ends in here. I visit an old record store, parentheses, head shop in Minneapolis. They know I am a Replacements fan, so they gave me a bunch of the Live from Maxwell swag. They also have a nice selection of used cassettes. I picked you out a few. Those early Del Lords albums aren't even on Spotify. Also, one day they were giving away a bunch of old rock magazines, snagged a few issues of Spin. Bet you could do an episode on each of the issues I included. Spread the word about D&J Glove Repair on the East Coast, he says. So we were talking baseball a little bit earlier. D&J Glove Repair is Jimmy's business in Minneapolis.
Midwest.
And he takes old baseball gloves and he makes like wallets and stuff. I guess he also repairs gloves too.
That's part of
the repair business.
Mm-hmm.
But he also makes some cool stuff out of the old gloves.
Yeah, I'm literally about to pass out from excitement.
From how cool this stuff is?
This is pretty much the greatest box I've ever opened in my life.
Okay,
I mean, there's like 55 things in here.
All right, I was reading. I didn't really get to see it, but I see the Del Lords cassettes. One, two. There's two alarm cassettes.
that's
missing part of the case.
Which makes me really love it.
The Alarm Electric Folklore Live and the Alarm Eye of the Hurricane and the Del Lords, Johnny Comes Marching Home, and Frontier Days.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We love cassettes. This Ziploc bag.
What is this?
I know. There's some replacement stuff in there.
Oh, this must be the swag he was talking about.
I got a bumper sticker from No Name Records, Jim. I got a whole bunch of... Look at this DJ Glove Repair merch.
Oh, this is cool.
In this bag.
So little postcards. You
so
grab
nice.
One of those. I'll grab one of these. Yeah.
Look at that. Buttons and stickers.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, of the glove repair.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay, so the way I understood the letter from Jimmy, I guess we have to make a podcast on this issue of Spin magazine.
Radiohead exclusive. The world's greatest rock band?
Yeah.
Question mark?
When was it ever that big, Jim? I don't remember. Was that
the big oversized like Rolling Stone? That's how it started. Because they wanted basically it was Bob Guccione Jr. who started
the
magazine. Basically, his dad gave him money. And he basically wanted it to be like Rolling Stone, but not so boomer-centric.
Yeah.
He wanted to be more Gen X.
It was
Rolling
pretty good
at
the beginning,
it was.
Think. Yeah. And then they cut it down to this size, more the, you know, the tabloid size. And also, look inside this one, Jim. CDHQ, pick out your 12 CDs for $1.
I wonder if that deal's still good.
That's the updated Columbia House. But it's got one of those perforated things you tear out and mail in.
I don't see 12 CDs here that I would want to order. You know, I never did quite get around to buying that Vertical Horizon album. Jimmy, thank you so much.
Oh, this is amazing.
Like we said, it's the year of free stuff on Rockin' the Suburbs. Send us free stuff.
Keep it coming,
folks. We love it.
More cassettes.
We'll take some photos of some of the stuff and get that out there.
Hell yeah.
All right. Now let's get to the purpose of this episode beyond the free stuff. The artist we're going to talk about today, who there's, you know, some feeling perhaps had a hit song that didn't really reflect his overall talents, is Thomas Dolby.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember, of course, as I probably everyone, you know, our age can remember, is that She Blinded Me With Science video.
Oh, my God.
It was on a lot, wasn't it?
Yeah, you heard it like 50 times.
On a lot. And, I would say it's a pretty good song. I don't know how other people feel about it. Are you good with that song?
I like that song.
Okay, I do too. So.
I've always liked it.
We got a Facebook message here from a listener named Mike Dodge Weisskopf.
Yep.
And he writes about Thomas Dolby this. So the thing about Dolby is that in his early work, he was really channeling this deep, melancholic, almost filmic approach to storytelling in his songwriting. His songs have this narrative through line about lost, fading, or corrupted worlds influenced by classic European cinema and pulp science fiction. And compositionally, he was pretty advanced. His songs had rich and complex chord structures and phrasings that had more in common with Joni Mitchell than Men Without Hats. And in fact, his debut album, The Golden Age of Wireless, didn't even have She Blinded Me With Science on it. But when Dolby saw the success of the music video as a format with the launch of MTV, he had an idea for a video that took a lot of visual cues from classic silent comedies. So he persuaded his label EMI to let him make one. Trouble is, he didn't have a song, so he wrote She Blinded Me With Science as kind of a knockoff tune to accompany this video idea. So the song which came to define his career, one which he calls the most frivolous song that I've ever written, really started as kind of a proof of concept. And it became such a runaway hit that EMI withdrew his album, rearranged and remixed the track listing so that it now started with She Blinded Me With Science and issued it again with a new cover. And the thing is, if you drop the needle on pretty much any other track on that album, you get a much purer sense of who Dolby was as a songwriter. One of our submarines, Airwaves, Weightless, or Europa and the Pirate Twins are all magnificent representations of his songcraft. He went even deeper on his next album, The Flat Earth, which took him another 2 years to complete, despite having only seven songs. Again, though, the record label went with a song that Dolby had written for Michael Jackson, Hyperactive, and attempted to cash in on his zany novel image for a second time with severely diminished results. So thank you for that note, Mike. There's some great background there on Thomas Dolby. Did you know a lot of that stuff?
I did know some of it. I will say this about what Mike wrote. I have one serious problem with it.
Okay.
He shouldn't have stopped.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He was really had me hooked, man. Like, this is way better than the Wikipedia entry on Dolby. This is really smart and understands where he came from.
Yeah, and you know a lot more about Thomas Dolby than do I. The one thing I do know about him, and I think I learned this through you, when Mike here talks about compositionally, he was pretty advanced. The songs had rich and complex chord structures and phrasing and blah, blah, blah. Thomas Dolby now works as like a music professor at Johns Hopkins.
That's right.
Is
Johns
that right?
Hopkins University
right.
at something called the Peabody Institute.
Right.
So they're actually teaching an advanced degree in new music media in the sense that, like, hey, all these new people that are making video games and virtual reality experiences and 3D experience, they need music to go with it. You have to learn the
right.
the process. Because Dolby made a lot of money, and we'll learn about this more, Jim, in the ringtone business.
Oh, I forgot about that, too.
Yeah.
I did know that. Okay, so we'll get to all that. But anyway, my point being, this is not just some guy who just kind of like learned a few guitar chords on his own and just sort of, you know, dashed out some songs. I mean, he has chops, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Seriously.
Okay. Yeah. So tell us about Thomas Dolby. What do we need to know about him? And is this true that his work is not really She Blinded Me with Science?
Well, let's begin by hearing a little of that.
Okay.
I don't know, man. It still sounds pretty fresh.
I think it's pretty great.
Yeah.
What I've forgotten about that, I mean, there's about like 12 different things in that song that I just love.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just all the little touches, all the components of that song are pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I love that. And again, I remember as a kid, like when that came on TV, like you couldn't not watch it.
I know.
It was just mesmerizing.
It was galvanizing.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So here's what I'll tell you about Dolby that I know. And this is going to get a little weird.
Okay.
His real name, Jim, and I want to tell you this because this will set you in the time, right, that Dolby started getting into music. His real name was Thomas Robertson.
Okay.
And he didn't want to use Tom or Thomas Robertson as his stage name when he made music because the Tom Robinson Band, was actually kind of popular. So that's what we're talking about. Like
in
1978.
England, right?
Yeah. 78. Like,
right.
Just right as, you know, that first wave of punk was breaking, that's when he was living in London. He dropped out of college. And so this is where Dolby was coming from.
It's like a David Jones situation, right?
Kind of, right?
Yeah.
And like Jagger Richards, they were like art students. You know, people forget this. But so his father and grandfather were both really well-respected graduates from Cambridge, like Cambridge dons. They graduated with like the utmost honors. Yet Dolby dropped out of college and just apparently during the garbage strike of 77 and some of that Thatcherism revolt, he would go around and find like musical instruments in dumpsters and on the street and just wire them all together and then just kind of write songs on them. So what happened to Dolby, in my opinion, Jim, is this. He was, you know, as Mike wrote, a very narrative songwriter always, right? He was very cinematic. He understood like sweep and emotion, but he was also so smart that he could toss off like a brilliant little one-off, and he could work in any style, in my opinion, just because he was that smart. But his real heart and passion was those sweeping, you know, songs.
Yes.
Europa and the Pirate Twins, certainly an amazing song off the first album. I saw that album with like the scientific guy with the round glasses, and I was like, I'm getting this.
Would you put him in sort of the Brian Eno camp? Would you?
In one sense, but I think he was too brainy to be like Eno. You know, Eno was more of an artist and like a conceptualist. You know,
I guess I was just thinking sort of like the soundscape.
But yeah,
kind of thing,
I think
right? You're
right. When Dolby was at his best, he was kind of playing off some of Eno's themes. I think you're exactly right.
And what about the other one I hear listening to some other work? Well, even She Blinded Me with Science, I think to some extent, is, I think you could compare maybe somewhat to Peter Gabriel.
Someone who sort of staked out their own territory and kind of, you know, had a distinctive personality, but also worked in popular mediums, right? Gabriel was always tossing off a hit.
He'd have a hit song, but then the rest of his album would be kind of weird, you know, and have all this other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So really for me, Jim, the Flat Earth, the second album, really was the one for me. Like, I love this album, like from start to finish. It only has 7 songs on it. It took him, I don't know how long to complete, 2.5 years after he had a massive hit. So he didn't follow up his massive hit with another, you know, song. It took him like forever. And the single, as Mike said, was a song called Hyperactive, which is a really junky kind of pop song that was a pale imitation of She Blinded Me with Science. But the rest of the songs in this record are emotional and deep and, like, reminds me, Jim, of, like, the middle of an August night when there's a lot of humidity and the air finally cools down, but it's still kind of heavy, you know, and it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous record, and I really, really like it. So why don't we hear something off that? There's a song called Screen Kiss that's one of my all-time favorites.
The moon is bright and the haze above old Hollywood. Clock in the morning, hail in hand, you can hear his golden surfer boys crying out. Mommy won't come out of the bathroom. Would you talk to say sorry if he hit you? But it's buried in the screenplay of his feature. Screen kiss, one screen kiss, straight from a film, I forget who was in. Screen kiss, one screen kiss, blue filter lens, and a pool of Vaseline. But all the rushes look the same, only there's a movie wouldn't pay to see again. If it's the one with him in, you and I could be a mile above the earth tremors.
Enormously rich.
It is. That's the kind of song that it draws you in. You want to hear it to its conclusion. Yeah. Unfortunately, you didn't get to hear. But, you know, as I explained to you before we started recording, I was listening to this album today while I was at work in the day job, and I just couldn't get into it because it's not that kind of record. You have to sit and listen to this.
You really do, yeah. And it holds up to repeated playings, which is always something I've adored about albums. Like, if I can listen to it every time, discover one small little detail I didn't know before, that's great. So here's an interesting thing, Jim. I'll tell you this.
Okay.
I've never told anyone this, I don't think, on a podcast before, but you know they have those series of books, 33 and a third?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I thought it would be kind of perverse and different to pitch an idea to them, you know, about a Thomas Dolby album. So I actually wrote up, sent in a pitch.
A proposal? Yeah.
For a 33 and a third book on the Flat Earth by Thomas Dolby. Yeah.
Okay. And?
Never heard back. Oh. I don't know. I think it was a little too left field, even for them. You know, they do some kind of left field stuff, but that one was really left
field. My first thought is that you were going to say you sent in the proposal and then later on realized that they had already published that one, right? That was the first thing. But no,
that did happen.
So do you want to tell us what the gist of this?
Oh, it was going to be a detailed history.
Okay.
It was going to be very, very. I was literally going to write like the history of Thomas Dolby
okay.
in rich detail from beginning to end. And as you heard me spiel, I got some stuff. Like, I did a lot of research okay. on it. So my pitch was not uninformed. It was just misguided, I think, because they were at the time, and I think I sent this in in what year is this? I think I sent it in 2006.
Okay.
So the series was pretty young, and they were doing like classic indie cornerstones like Murmur and
right.
London Calling and
right.
you know, Exile on Main Street. They weren't going to, you know, let it be. They were probably weren't going to go for the next one is The Flat Earth.
Yeah. They might today, though. I don't know.
Actually, I think it might be big
enough. Thought you were saying that the pitch was so left field. Because some of those
beautiful.
Books, you know, don't even, they don't barely even deal with the album.
That's right.
Right.
No,
about,
the pitch was beautiful.
Okay.
It was very detailed. Right. I think it had bullet points.
Well, dig that out.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
You can always self-publish if you
like. Right. The bonus, the digital download will be your interview with Paul Westerberg.
Maybe the, yes. It will. Maybe when we finally, start the you know, Rock in the Suburbs, you know, exclusive membership
yeah.
vault or whatever
tier.
It is, right?
Right?
Then you'll just, you know, type this up, type up the book.
That's right.
And just, and
I'll people dictate
who,
it.
People who donate a certain amount of money to keep the show going, then they get just a bunch of like loose leaf
that's right.
papers
typed in different directions.
Bullet points on the yeah. flat earth, right?
Coffee stains all over it. Yeah.
Who wouldn't want that? That'd be awesome. Okay.
So let me just really quickly, because I know we got to get out of here. Let me hit a couple of quick high points about Dolby's career. So
I want to hear about the ringtones. Are you going
okay.
to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So the next thing he did was an album called Aliens Ate My Buick, which was a
yeah.
very strange kind of album with some weird experiments on it. But I think he just kind of put it out because he needed to put out a record and he just, you know, did some stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember that at all?
I just know that the cover looks like an old like movie poster
yeah.
kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Yeah,
right?
very
yeah.
cinematic in another way.
You know.
And then he did an album in 1992, Jim, called Astronauts and Heretics. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but let me blow your mind for a second, because now every podcast we do has to mention Van Halen. So Eddie Van Halen plays guitar solos on two of the songs on this record.
Really?
And you know who else appears? Bob Weir and Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead. I'm not making this up. They both appear on a song on this record also.
Okay.
Now your mind is kind of blown.
It really is. Because first of all, I can't, the pairing of Thomas Dolby and Eddie Van Halen, I can't really see. I could see the Bob Weir a little bit more.
Well, you know, apparently, but, you know, yeah. Thomas was writing a couple demos for Michael Jackson at one point, so... And I know Michael Jackson and Eddie Van Halen
yeah.
obviously had a famous, so maybe that's where it came from. I don't know. But
that's bizarre.
Maybe Dolby was like putting that connection together. I have no idea, but isn't that weird?
That is very weird.
Yeah. And then he got into business, essentially. He realized an opportunity business-wise. You know, he didn't make a ton of money off She Blinded Me With Science. I'm sure he made some, but he got into video game scores. And then in 2002, he was super smart. He founded a piece of technology that allowed you to customize your ringtone.
Yeah.
So he founded Retro Ringtones, and he made a ton of money on this business and sold it like 5 or 6 years later. He sold the patents and all the technology.
Oh, well, it's so funny. If anybody remembers, I'm sure people remember this, right? It sort of came and went in a flash, like just in
yeah.
a few years, but there was that little window of opportunity where people... mostly with like flip phones back
that's
then,
right.
you know, then and this technology came about where
yeah.
you could customize your ringtone and you could get, it started with these polyphonic
yes.
Ringtones of pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't the actual song.
No,
it was like
that was what was cool about them. Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine, this would have been like, oh, whatever year the album came out, 03, 04, something like that.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had, Franz Ferdinand's Take Me Out. Nice. And so every time his phone is ringing, you go, dee, 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 dee,
that's pretty dee, cool.
Yeah. But,
that's what Dolby was making money on.
But then pretty soon after, it wasn't very long before then you could get little snippets song. Of the actual mm-hmm. song.
Yeah, it moved fast.
And then, but I also met a guy in, I don't know, 06 or 07 who worked for Universal Music. And he told me at that point in the 2000s, those few years in the 2000s, whether it was the polyphonic ones or the actual clips of music, it was really carrying the music industry yeah. mm-hmm. for a while there because
digitally.
Those things cost like a dollar yeah. and people would buy like several of them. Yeah. You know, you get sick of it, you want to change it, whatever. And it was all found money to them.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
They didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
So it actually kind of helped the music industry when it needed it for a little while yeah. there. So isn't that
yeah.
a funny thing?
That's very smart. Yeah. I didn't even think about it that way, but you're right. And Dolby was kind of right there.
Yeah.
You know, it was
that's
interesting.
Amazing.
Right? Yeah. And then, I think it was around 2008 or nine, he sort of decided, you know, I'm done being a businessman. I want to make music again. And he did a tour where he played a lot of his old songs. And I reviewed that show, for the Washington Post, and he played at the Birchmere. So it was right up my alley. And so it was a pretty small tour, but it was full. There was a lot of people there. And then, he put out another album in 2011. And as we said, now he's a professor
right.
of this new music media course at the Peabody Institute at Johns Hopkins University. And he also is the musical director of the TED conferences. So whenever they have a TED conference, he does all the music originally.
Of course. That
of
makes
course.
Sense.
So that's all I got on Dolby. Not much.
And Johns Hopkins, by the way, is right up in Baltimore,
yeah.
right up the road
where
here.
The Orioles play.
So I'm sure Thomas is going to hear this podcast and then he's going to say, you got it all wrong.
Yeah.
And then we'll say, come on the show, right? We can
yeah.
have him on.
I mean, you know, I'm into Dolby. I was working as manager on the old show and we just kind of ran out of time.
We got it. Okay.
Yeah. So we might
we
be
gotta
able
work
to get
on
in
that
touch
again.
With him. Be great to have Thomas on, wouldn't it?
That would be fantastic.
Really
great. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
All right. We can make that happen. All right.
See what you got yourself into, Mike Dodge Weisskopf. You had no idea. But thank you very much for that.
Very
was,
good
that
stuff.
Was great.
All right. This was great. This was really great.
I'm going to be quiet now.
Okay. And we have one more day of this. One more day of misrepresented bands.
Man, we saved the best for last.
I think so. I think so. So you want to tune into that tomorrow because you listen.
Every day.
Every day. And find us on all the big podcast platforms. And as I mentioned, you can email us rock@suburbspod.com. If you have a suggestion for another misrepresented act, I'm sure we'll do another week of these at some point in the future. These are pretty
fun.
It's
inevitable.
You and I have come up with other ideas since we started recording this. Yeah. And or you can call our Suburban Party Line, 612-440-1984. And you can leave a message there, and then you get your voice on the show, and we send you a sticker. And I'm kind of behind on sending out the stickers, so apologies.
We got time.
But we're going to get back on that. And because the free stuff goes both ways. It's
it
a two-way street,
this
right?
It's not a one-way street,
that's
people.
Right.
And you know what else? Go to the website.
Go to the website, suburbspod.com.
I got a text from Sam today. Jimmy said traffic was looking really good.
Really? Yeah. That's great. You go onto the website and you can download, if you're a special donor, you can download a selection of ringtones. That's right. You've got to work
only
on that.
89 cents each.
Sam's going to build that for us.
That's
behind
that.
The paywall. Yeah, that's
polyphonic ringtones. It's not a bad idea.
And then, actually, it's not. a theme song. Get Randall on that.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a bad
all
idea.
Right.
Okay.
Call.
Where was I here? Oh, yeah. There's also social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Suburbs Pod, or Let's Go, because tomorrow's a big day.
Yeah.
I got to get rest for this one. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. more in common with Joni Mitchell than Men Without Hats.